The San Francisco Experience Podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy, independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 26, Episode 2, Thriving, How to Create a Healthier, Happier, and More Prosperous Life. Talking with author Rand Seelig. Hi, Rand.
Hi, Jim. Pleasure to be here with you today.
Our guest today is an accomplished entrepreneur, coach, conservationist, and board member. He shares with us his professional and life experience that's enabled him to thrive, not simply survive. An MBA graduate of the Stanford Business School, he created his own investment banking firm, and he believes that we can all be the author of our own story. He joins us from his home in Mill Valley, California. Welcome to the show, Rand.
Thank you, Jim.
Rand, let's start on a personal note. You're the son of two centenarians. Dad is 101 years old, and your mother is 98 years old. Tell us about your early life and the ongoing presence in your life of your centenarian parents.
Well, I feel extraordinarily fortunate to have the parents I've had. In fact, the introduction or the beginning of my book says, I want to thank all of my teachers, formal and informal, in school, at university, in the workplace, and throughout my life. My first teachers were my mother and father. And as I've thought a lot about who I am over, decades actually, but certainly diving deeply as I spent the last 4 years writing, publishing, and my book, I've thought a lot about how I became the person I am. And it does go back, obviously, to them. My mother is, I guess at one point in time, she was just brilliant. She was a bacteriologist and then became a social worker. And she had an amazing love of nature and animals. She loves reading, all these things I got from her. And she's just a very sweet, nice person. Dad delivered to me another entirely different set of goodies, which I'm eternally grateful for. Yes. Those include having a lot of discipline, having extremely high standards, following through, and being social. One of the dad's points to me over the years is to have friends of all ages. I'm routinely amazed that dad has friends. I mean, people who care about him, who visit with him, who call him up, who are half his age. Now, half his age still is no spring chicken, but nonetheless, that made a big impression on me. And so I've done that. Dad's first career was in the military. And so we moved, but fortunately only every 4 years. Then a couple of years in Japan, and then 8 years in New Mexico, and then went on to Germany. And my perspective of the world was very influenced by the fact that we weren't living in just one place and not just in the United States. Mm-hmm. That contributed a lot to my sense of the world and the sense of the usness that is possible. Mm-hmm. Which in, you know, the world we're living in today is very important. Dad's a toughie. You know, there are a lot of qualities about him that are great, but I must say it's not been easy being his son because his attention has always been on other people, really not with the immediate family. Mm-hmm. And there were times early on when I would have appreciated a little bit more of some comments saying, hey, I'm proud of you, or wow, that's what you just did was amazing. But I found a way. I found other people to nudge me along, and so that worked out well.
Well, Rand, in Thriving, you lay out a very purposeful approach to a life of structure, goals, self-awareness, and most importantly, self-improvement. There are four sections in the book, starting with thriving personally, thriving with others, engage with the world, and moving ever forward. Let's start with thriving personally.
The construction of this book is an important element to the whole concept of thriving. I believe very strongly that if you're thriving in only one of those four domains, you're really not getting there yet. There's a lot more work to do. And it's important to remember that thriving is really the climate. It's not the weather. So it's an average over a period of time. It's not just yesterday or today, where, you know, any given day may not be such a great day. And fundamental to this first section, which is half the book, it's so fundamental, so foundational to the rest of it, that it covers 8 of the 14 chapters in my book. And it really builds on a series of concepts, which you referred to, Jim. This idea that you really have to know yourself. You have to become self-aware. If you do that work, and it's not easy, and it's not just a one-time thing. You keep doing it. It's why you change, the world changes around you, the people coming in and out of your life change. So it's a process, but the commitment to that process yields enormous dividends. And I think fundamental to all four sections is the notion that we have a lot of power. We have the power to make choices. Choices of every which kind, a choice of who to spend time with, a choice around what we work on, and very importantly, the choice about how we feel. And that tends to surprise people when I talk about a choice of feelings. People say, well, I just felt that. Well, actually, no, you actually make some choices around all of our feelings, and you choose to hold on to them or let them go, especially if they're not good feelings. So the first section is very much a building process. The first chapter is about building character. And it goes from there of having a relationship with ourselves and then managing ourselves well. There's a whole chapter on money, because in my career and my life, I've met a lot of people who are very confused about that, not really thinking that they could define success their way, not really knowing what enough really was.
Can I just come back to the relationship with ourselves? Talk to me about that, because we often overlook having a relationship with ourselves. What exactly do you mean by that? And give us some examples.
The relationship with ourselves is, again, back to this idea of really knowing ourselves, knowing how we're feeling. In my case, I have to, from time to time, especially when I'm a little conflicted or confused, I have to go to a piece of paper and I jot down, I write it down, I try to break down what's going on. And then I figure out always that it's a series of interwoven emotions that I'm feeling. And then I think, especially if I'm feeling kind of blue or unhappy about something, I got to look at what I have done to contribute to that situation, what choices I'm making about it. And then once I've sorted that out, then I say, okay, here, I'm going to create an action plan. This idea of the relationship with ourselves builds also on a lot of self-esteem. I have very high self-esteem, which again, pays enormous dividends. It's not having a giant ego. It's just liking who I am and willing to commit to becoming a better person all the time. I'm not a finished product, and that's fine. I'm willing to accept that, and I'm also willing to accept that there are things I do and things I kind of am that are maybe not the best in the world, but I'm living with that. And I'm forgiving myself. Forgiving ourselves is another really critical ingredient. So much baggage we put in our backpacks. They're heavy rocks that we're lifting up steep mountains. And if you can look at what you've done, mistake you've made, something you did that hurt somebody, forgive yourself, make amends for it, and then learn from your mistakes, turn them into valuable lessons, then things proceed much, much better.
Now, you touched on money and how much is enough and our relationship with money. Give us, and of course, you're an investment banker. You've still have a career in the financial service industry. Give us a sense about money, how much is enough, and how we should be intentional about earning money and about living with money and taking care of money.
We live in a world with a lot of messages coming at us all the time. And the messages, if I could boil it down, basically suggest that we are economic animals and our first and primary decision is about money. And I think most people know when they really look at themselves, that's not true. there are so many other elements to their lives that actually could very much outweigh. And I'm not talking about people who are struggling, who don't have enough food to eat or don't have a roof over their heads. I'm not talking about that situation. Of course, that affects a lot of people around the world. So I'm talking about people who are doing well. And now it's a question of what else to do with the extra money they have. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes down to a sense of where is their focus. If the focus is external, and they're looking at their coworkers, they're looking at their neighbors, they're looking at the boss, they're thinking about a conversation they had with somebody who took an amazing trip, which was very expensive, then the enoughness could continue to be elusive. But if instead they do this work and they say, what's important to me? What are my values? What makes me happy? What makes me satisfied? What makes me relaxed? Then enoughness could be well within their reach. Mm-hmm. Well, I've done that. This is part of the, you mentioned this notion I have, I believe it very strongly, we can all be the author of our own story. Well, there's a corollary to that, which is we can also design our own lives. And I've done that, and I'm telling people as often as I can that they can do that too. And that means for choices around, are you going to take that promotion and have to move somewhere else? Are you going to work for years and years and years at a job you don't like, or travel commitments that are exhausting? These kinds of things are within our bailiwick to make decisions about. And it may mean that you are not getting that big promotion or taking a new job that pays a lot more money, but you realize that what you are doing in the portfolio that represents your life, mental health, physical health, a sense of fulfillment, that financial differential is well worth it.
Let's move on to gratitude. Again, this comes under the rubric of thriving personally. Talk to me about gratitude and how we can choose to be grateful.
Gratitude is a whole chapter in this panoply of what it takes to thrive. There's a great quote. I have a lot of quotes in my book, and this one goes along the lines that the challenge and the unhappiness go away when gratitude shows up. And when I first saw that quote, I thought, oh my gosh, that is so fundamentally true, that we all face some kind of challenges as we move along. These challenges sometimes can feel a little overwhelming. But if we can take a moment and in a calm, kind of serene way, say, what is going on? Yes, I'm having these challenges, whether they're money things or health things or mental health things. But now I've come along the way and I just feel grateful for that which I do have. The actual quote is that I was referring to comes from a guy named Neil Donald Walsh, and it says, the struggle ends when gratitude begins.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to purpose and meaning. In that section, you quote, and I think it's Mark Twain, and the quote refers to the two most important days in your life. Correct me if I'm wrong. The first most important day in your life is the day that you're born. The second most important day in your life is when you figure out why. Tell us a little bit about that quote, and I think it's Mark Twain. Tell us a little bit about that quote and how that quote has informed you in your journey as you've built this very purposeful life.
I love that quote. I think Mark Twain is onto something hugely important. How many people have we met who really don't have purpose, or they had purpose and it slips away? My business career has been occupied with very, very successful people. They built up a company. They asked me to sell their company. And I start off by saying, well, what are your objectives? And we go through that. And because I become their most trusted advisor, I stay in touch. And a couple of years later, I see them in so many cases, Jim. They are a shadow of their former selves because they did not replace the purpose they once had about building a company, of creating relationships, of having a wide variety of challenges. Mm-hmm. And the bucket list just doesn't quite do it. So where I would play with Mark Twain is, it's not the single day that you figure out why. You reinvent that reason again and again throughout life until the very end. I'll be giving a talk coming up at a retirement home, and that's one of the points I'll make. If your purpose is to just be pleasant and encouraging to the people around you in the retirement home, that's mighty purpose. That's great purpose.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree with you more. And of course, the sage Mark Twain is always good for a pithy and compelling quote. That one stood out to me. Let's move on to the second section of the book, which is Thriving Together. Chapter 9, you talk about relationships with others. Tell us about relationships with others as part of our intentionality to build a thriving life.
What would our life be like if we didn't have relationships with other people? I mean, there's all these references to the person sitting alone on the mountaintop or off on the desert island. And, there might be times when you think, wow, I'd love to have a few days like that, get away from all this storm and drum. But the reality is that our lives flow because of relationships with others. And in my book, I refer to an architecture of actually making those relationships better, deeper, and more enduring. It's a possibility. It can be studied and practiced. Absolutely. It's another one of these habits. One of the great things I learned from my dad is to have friends of all ages. And so I'm pleased to have had him as a model for that. And I can say very happily that I have friends of all ages, people who are in their 20s. And I have friends who are 20 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. So it adds a tremendous amount of richness to have really high quality relationships. There's another quote I just love. And it goes back to, back to what we're talking about with the financial. And this quote goes, "Treasure your relationships, not your possessions." Anthony D'Angelo. Uh-huh. Again, another choice. What are we going to focus on? And if you have relationships that are kind of not as fulfilling, not as deep as you like, what are you going to do about that? I had an experience about 15 years ago where I woke up one morning and I said, wow, I am having a fantastic life. What could make it better? And I said to myself, I would like to go to a handful of people I've known for a long time. I consider them to be friends. They consider me to be a friend, but I'd like to deepen that. And then I realized what I need to do is become more vulnerable with them. Mm. I need to share with them some of the questions I'm having, some of the challenges I'm facing. And I also said to myself, it's possible that not everybody's going to go deeper with me. But I didn't think there's going to be any risk if somebody says, wow, you're weird. I'm getting rid of you. You're no longer a friend. No. And so 5 out of 6 of these people began sharing their more intimate concerns and thoughts. And our relationships just, they blossomed. So the vulnerability is an important ingredient to depth of relationship, along with, of course, being honest. And you got to know yourself and know how, what's going on and how you're feeling to be able to be honest.
And that then brings us on to the third section of the book, Thriving in the World, where you talk about the importance of charity, philanthropy, service, a life of service. And you also talk about conservation and the environment. Tell us about thriving in the world and how that's been a very important and fulfilling part of your journey.
My parents shared with me from the very outset that being of service is a magnificent. It's an important, it's a critical, it's a job to do, and to do it cheerfully and with the best of your ability. So I have taken that on very happily. So I've been on 18, 19 boards over the last 40 years. I've committed to our local community as a scoutmaster, as a Little League coach. My wife and I set up the Donor Advised Fund many years ago, and so we're doing our philanthropic bit there. And for your listeners, the difference between charity and philanthropy, they're not the same. Philanthropy is designed to go at the heart, the root of a problem, the source of what's causing a problem, and see if we can't fix that, structural problems. Whereas charity is that situation right now that needs correcting for the person or maybe the environment. So that's something. And as people get more talented, have more experience, then they have that much more to share. And I just really hope people will take that on seriously and do it. Mm-hmm. And we live in the world that is our green, beautiful earth. And without it, our life obviously wouldn't exist. And we wouldn't have the things that we have, like water and air. These things Mother Nature provides for us. So I am a roll-up-your-sleeve conservationist. We work on projects, and we've been around the world doing projects, but our focus really in the last 15 years has been here in the western U.S. and in our local marsh here in Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. It just makes my heart sing to do that work.
And then moving on to the fourth section of the book, where you talk about thriving by moving ever forward. And of course, we're talking about each of us individually evolving and aging with soul, being wise. Give us a sense of that season of our lives when we are moving ever forward and focusing on those issues of gaining wisdom and continuing to evolve as we grow older.
Wisdom is a word we all know in a certain kind of way, but I think at the end of the day, wisdom boils down to making good decisions. And evolving is a choice. It's a commitment. It's one I've made for myself. As I say, I'm a work in progress. There's more things I want to continue to work at and get even better at, or maybe learn for the first time. Hemingway said, "There's nothing noble in being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is being superior to your former self."
Hmm.
So I think the project, if you want to think of it that way, of evolving and with soul, meaning you're becoming a better person, is inordinately worthwhile. And you become more attractive. There are a lot of people who may have achieved a lot, but they're fairly lonely, or maybe their relationship background is littered with unhappy stories. So evolving with soul, having humility, appreciating other people, these are really marvelous things to do. And when it comes to wisdom, it's not about the words, it's about the deeds.
Mm-hmm.
A smart person knows what to say, but a wise person knows whether to say it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That takes restraint. That takes a thoughtfulness about who it is that you're speaking with, and how your antenna is up, and you're thinking to yourself, well, how would they react to that? Are they going to just think it's just another ego thing that's being presented to them? Or are they going to realize that it's maybe a gift, a caring gesture? And then adjust yourself accordingly.
Rand, at the outset of our conversation, I mentioned that your parents are centenarians, and very few of us, in fact, a tiny, tiny minority of us, have parents who have reached 100 or are on the cusp of reaching 100, and a lifetime, decades and decades and decades of relationship. Tell us, and as we come to our close here, tell us how this purposeful life that you've created, that you've built, that your parents set you on that track, I assume, tell us how that purposefulness continues to inform your relationship with these two individuals, one of whom is 101, the other is 98 years old. Tell us how the structured life of purpose continues to benefit that relationship with centenarian parents.
I have to say, without taking anything away from either mom or dad, that this life I've created for myself and the sense of purpose is my own invention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I learned a lot of really important building block things from them growing up. And when I went off to college, you know, I was in the cauldron of becoming my own person and taking a lot of responsibility for all those steps along the way. And my commitment to both my parents, especially in these waning years for them, is to be a great son. In part because it's without doubt the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
but also because as I have my own two fantastic children, maybe to model for them with the hope that when my wife gets to the point where she is really in need of something more than the checks that we can write to pay for a place, but the care and attention or the extra little bit that they will have seen me in action, mm-hmm. and will step up. And sometimes with busy lives, that's a lot easier said than done. I feel very fortunate to have the parents I do. And, you know, when I had a big problem with my dad many years ago, a very good friend of mine who's a psychiatrist said, write your dad a letter. You don't have to mail it. You could if you want. But write the letter to the dad you wish you had, the dad that the letter could read something like, Dad, it was so great to spend the weekend with you. We talked about these great things. We had so much fun. Well, that was not the dad. That's not the dad I have, but it became the dad in my mind. So now I have two dads. It's been fantastic because mm-hmm. it allows me to appreciate the dad who I do have for all his great qualities and all that he's done for so many people, his commitment to education and justice and so on. I just have enormous admiration for him, but I don't look to him for, I don't need him. My needs are satisfied elsewhere, and I can rely on myself, and that's my other dad.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rand, in the remaining few moments of the podcast, what are your closing thoughts about thriving?
I'd like to end, Jim, with the very last quote from my book. It's the one and only quote of mine, and it says, could this coming year be the best year of your life thus far? And after thinking about that, and it's a serious question, mm-hmm. it's not a throwaway question, and then ask this question, what would it take to make it so?
Mm.
So my book is really meant to be an inspirational book, a book of encouragement, talking about our enormous power to make choices and to design our own lives, to take responsibility, to strive forward, to maybe reach our own potential. It's reached a lot of people already, and I'm getting comments right and left from people of all ages in all stages of life saying, thank you. This has opened possibilities for me, and I very much appreciate it. And it's a mission. It's now my purpose.
And Rand, where can our listeners buy a copy of Thriving?
Well, certainly you can go to the big giant on the block, Amazon. It's there. But you can also go to the independent bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and so on. It's in all of them. You can go to my website, randselig.com, learn more about me and my book, and read some amazing testimonials. You can buy the book there, too.
Mm-hmm. And Rand, are you working on any follow-up projects to Thriving?
Well, I am. Thank you, Jim. I will be coming up a little bit later this year, hopefully by midsummer, an audiobook. A lot of people have said they read books by listening rather than holding on to it or the Kindle. So I'm eager to do that. People said I should be the narrator for a lot of reasons. So I'm looking into that. I would like to do a TED Talk. That's a whole nother very high level to do a really high quality TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Gearing up for that. And my presentation skills, you know, I like thinking of life as a journey of lifelong learning. So I'm willing very happily to take that on. And I'd like to make my book into a course. The course, there's a bit of the framework for the course already in the book, because every two or three pages I ask another fairly meaty question, which are not meant to be in any way rhetorical. But to convert that into a quarter-long or semester-long course, either for university students or maybe for continuing ed, another goal. And at the end of the day, Jim, I would like to be recognized as a thought leader, mm-hmm. whether it's the topics that we've already talked about or whether it's things that we haven't gotten to, like what does aging well encompass and what can you do to age well? Everybody ages, but not everybody ages well.
Well, Rand, I think with that question and your answer, you've just illustrated section 4 of the book, which is thriving by moving ever forward. And that's exactly what you're doing. You are practicing what you preach.
Thank you, Jim.
And Rand, one final question. How can our listeners follow you?
Primary social media platform is LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage your listeners to go there. There's a whole background in LinkedIn on my business career running the Salig Capital Group. But the front end of it is what my focus has been for the last few years, which is all about the book. You know, there again is the link to my book website. Mm-hmm. And I will say, Jim, that I just got an award from the International Finance Association as the best investment banking firm in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Congratulations. So
I'm delighted. Thank you. I'm very delighted with that, although it's not going to move me off of my focus being about the book.
But once again, moving ever forwards. Well, on that note, Rand Salig, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure being with you.
And for our listeners, today's episode is number 509. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms with listeners in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast, ranking us number 12. This has been the San Francisco Experience Podcast with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.